Hey Lionesses, it's Natasha here, and today we are having another amplified audio interview. We're really excited because Sue Hollis is joining us. Welcome, Sue.
Hey, thank you, Natasha. Thank you so much for having me.
So to tell you guys a little bit about Sue and her amazing journey, ignoring her school career advisor's advice to become a librarian, Sue Hollis dropped out of college to find adventure, discover the world, and live big. Along the way, she's been a corporate heavy hitter, an entrepreneur helming a multi-million dollar company, and voted one of Australia's top 10 women entrepreneurs. In 2000, she co-founded Travel Edge with Grant Wilson, and Travel Edge has become the largest privately owned corporate travel management company in Australia, which is just amazing. She's captured this and more in her new book, Riding Raw, A Journey from Empty to Full. Welcome, Sue.
Oh, thank you, Natasha, and thank you for the introduction.
There's so much to talk to you about. Your story has been amazing. One of the things I will say that I've noticed that has kind of been like a recurring theme in learning a little bit about you is the theme about, you know, not being someone else to succeed, which I think is really important. At Lioness, we always talk a little bit about, you know, true success coming from being authentic and being who you are.
Exactly.
So before Travel Edge and this powerful journey that we're going to talk to you about, you were rocking as a sales executive at Qantas Australia. Why leave there?
Well, I guess I've been very fortunate, Natasha. I've had an amazing career with global airlines. So British Airways in Australia and London. I'm Australian, just in case the accent didn't give me away.
I love the accent.
Thank you, as long as you can understand it. And then I transitioned back from London with British Airways back to Qantas in Australia. And there I actually headed Australia sales. So I kind of ran the sales team for within Australia for Qantas. And I loved working in the business. I loved the airline industry. And, you know, and it certainly wasn't Qantas's fault, but I think I actually reached a point in my career which surprised me, I think, more than it surprised most people, where I suddenly felt that my values were being compromised working in such a big, heavy-duty corporate and a very kind of masculine environment. And I had always been someone that had been on a significant career trajectory. My career had been my complete focus. And it really shocked me one day to wake up and think, you know what, my values have become more important than the next promotion. And, you know, and in that environment, you have a choice. You have to ask yourself, you know, where are you prepared to make the compromise? And probably for about 18 months, I did make the compromise after kind of having reached that decision because I was a major breadwinner and, you know, there was a big financial risk at stake. But I did reach the point where I went, you know what, I can't do this anymore.
And so we're going to go back to talking about that transition for you. So I do want to talk a little bit about this trip, okay, because
yes.
I applaud you. I bow down to you. That is a bold thing to do. You know, sometimes I think when I want to know, obviously, what sparked the trip and led you on the road, because sometimes you might think, you know what, I just need to get away for a weekend and get my head clear or something like that. Deciding to run for 83 days, that's a totally different thing. What brought this idea for the trip on?
Well, you know, I think it's one of the combination of things. I was at a point, I guess, where I had started to try to be completely perfect in my life. So, you know, like most A-type personalities, I had, you know, the perfect career. I had all the external measures of success. So, you know, the perfect career. I had a beautiful house, a lovely home, beautiful boys, and a very understanding husband. I had toys. I had, you know, incredible adventures. And I guess to the external world, I had every single measure of success, but I was still empty. Mm. And, you know, that emptiness was probably caused from a lot of things. It was caused by a continual story that I told myself that I needed to be a warrior and I was out there and I was doing it by myself and nobody, I couldn't ask for help. I couldn't appear to be vulnerable. I had a continual need for perfection. So as well as kind of running a, you know, a big business, I had to be, you know, the perfect executive, the perfect mother, the perfect wife, the perfect athlete. You know, I do a lot of adrenaline sports, funnily enough, when we race motorbikes and things like that. So,
wow.
So in all areas, I had to be perfect, the perfect look. I was kind of, I think the best way to describe it is think housewives of, you know, Beverly Hills, but without the boobs.
Right.
So, you know. So with that whole look and persona and that need for external validation externally, and, you know, slowly, you know, you can maintain that perspective for many, many years until slowly things start to fall apart, and they did, and I started to get, I struggled at work. I just wasn't bringing the energy that I needed to my business. I started to get very sick. Pneumonia, pre-cancer, you know, all kinds of kind of, you know, bits of my armor started to fall off. And in most good traditions, I had the, you know, the kind of the complete breakdown in the bathroom. I'm never quite sure why you kind of have epiphanies in bathrooms, but I think it's because the lighting is so bad.
I think it's the water. I don't know, in the shower. And I'm like, what is it about the shower that just brings on my genius or unlocks, like, you know, my troubles? I don't know. But the bathroom is my favorite place. I always thought it had something to do with it's a place that I could get away to usually by yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, maybe that's it. But I can remember kind of walking into this bathroom. It was 4:30 in the morning. I was getting ready to go for a run before I ran the world. And I looked at myself and I didn't recognize myself. I was empty. My eyes were empty. And I started to literally kind of melt down then and there in front of myself. And two words just came out incredibly strongly. And it was just two words that just said, go quit. And I, you know, I kind of thought, well, go quit what? Quit my life, quit my job, quit running, you know, quit what?
Yeah.
And I realized that I was in grave danger of literally falling apart, and I had to make some significant change. And I literally kind of went from there, resigned from my role as CEO with my business, which is always tricky to do when you're, you know, when it's your own business. Resigned, found a great CEO. She took over the business. She continues to do a great job. And then two more words, which were go ride. I've ridden all my life, and I knew that was what I had to do to kind of, you know, heal myself. And so that's what we did. We went on a ride.
And so what year was this?
2016. Yep.
2016. Mm. You touched on so many things I think is important. One, when you just talked about outside validation.
Yeah.
I don't think that that is something that that it's sexy to admit, but I know a part of my growth for myself from my late 20s into my early 30s was admitting that I cared about that, about what other people thought about me, about being a people pleaser, and also trying to accept that I could not please everybody. That was tough.
You know, it really is, Natasha, and it's one of those things too, and you're so right, you don't want to talk about it. I can remember really struggling with that. Firstly, when I left Qantas to start my own business, because, you know, you go to a party and you hand out a business card or that says Qantas or British Airways or a global airline, and instantly doors open and people want to talk to you. And then, you know, to change and to change from that to go to saying, well, I'm Sue Hollis from Travel Edge, you know, and people saying Travel Eggs. What's Travel Eggs?
Right. Yep.
And my ego took a significant dent, and it did. It took me a while to kind of get over that. But then again, then the business started to pick up, and you know, we became big and successful. And it was really on my trip where I learned that I am not my business card, and to be able to let that go, because you know, I was meeting every time I pull up into a gas station, a solo woman on a big super bike, you know, usually from, you know, from British Columbia, from Canada where I started, you know, down to as far as New Mexico. Everybody wants to talk to you, which is, it's fantastic. And they ask me the normal kind of qualifying question, so what do you do? And for the first few weeks, I used to go straight into the spiel, you know, well, I've got this big business. Then I realized that they actually didn't care. And eventually, nor did I. All they wanted to do was to engage with this kind of crazy wild Australian that was standing in front of them.
Right.
You know, and they had no clue about my history or what I'd done or what I'd achieved, and it didn't matter at all. And so that was critical for me to be able to let that go and realize, you know, I'm not my business card. I don't need my role to define me. I am who I am. Right. Oh, and by the way, I do different things, but I am who I am internally.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. So the second message you get is go ride.
Go ride.
How did your family and friends, you know, take it when you said, hey, guess what, I'm going to go on this excursion? Or did you originally know it was going to be that many days, or you were just like, I'm just going to go do this thing and end up where I may?
Yeah, they didn't take it well. I can only describe it that way.
Yeah.
I've been riding since I was 16, and I've raced. So they know I'm a pretty capable rider, but I think they're very concerned about safety. You know, you're on the road,
oh, yeah.
You know, so there's obviously the traffic issues, potential accidents, there's wildlife, there's, you know, cowboys who also can be classed as wildlife. so they didn't take it that well. And they didn't really understand it, but they accepted that it was important to me. And so they kind of begrudgingly, you know, they begrudgingly felt that they understood that they needed to let me go. And what made it hard was I just really kind of said to them, look, I don't know how long this will take. I'm just going to keep going till I find the answers. It may be 2 weeks. It may be 2 months. It may be 4 months. I don't know. Which is really hard. It's a tough thing to do to people. It's a tough thing to do to people that love you.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, they only want the best for you, and they're concerned, you know, they were concerned every single day. But you know, to their credit, they gave me love and support and encouragement, said, just do what you need to do and we'll be here. So, you know, I was really blessed.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, because you reside in Australia till today, or are you living in the United States?
Well, I kind of come and go. So my oldest son is a cinematographer. He owns his own production company based out of Whistler, British Columbia, in Canada. So he's a Canadian resident, so he's been here for quite a few years. And it made sense for me to start my journey out of Whistler in British Columbia, which is about an hour and a half out of Vancouver. So I bought a motorbike, or I had a good friend bought it for me, and then they held it until I got here and literally just kind of came. I was here for about 3 days, spent some time with my son, and then just loaded up this bike and headed out into the wild.
What were some of the things you loaded your bike with? I can't even
Not a lot.
Begin to imagine what you would take. How did you decide what to take?
Well, not a lot, let me tell you, because my bike is what's called a super bike, so it's a race bike, so it is not designed to go touring. You spend most of the day riding looking like a pretzel with your knees up around your ears. It's, you know, and I'm not very tall, and it's a very big, it's 1,000 cc, it weighs about 450 pounds, it's a big bike, and it's not designed to go touring, but I chose it specifically because it was, you know, dangerous and fast and gorgeous,
right?
But it meant literally all I could take was about, you know, one pair of undies, a couple of pairs of socks, a T-shirt, and all of my wet weather gear. And that was about it. So that was how we headed out, very lightly.
One thing that
I forgot, heels. No matter where you are, a girl still has to have her heels. I did. Carried them for 12,000 miles.
That is awesome. Did you get the chance to wear them?
Oh, I did. I think I only used them once, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth carrying.
Now, did you head out with a plan, or you had expectations of where you wanted to go, or?
No, you know, not really. Before I left, I bought all the maps, and I used to kind of spread them out on the dining room table and look. And the more I looked, the more terrified I became. So then I would pack them all up. And it literally got to the stage where I figured that I would do a circle somehow. So I would kind of start in British Columbia, work my way through the states. And so, you know, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, and then back. So that was the only plan, and it literally would be a day-by-day decision, because once I actually started onto the road, there were so many variables that would change the plan every day, you know, whether it be weather, or road conditions or fires. There are a lot of fires kind of on the west coast that year. And sometimes I'd choose a route at night the next morning, and the next morning I would get up and just do a fire check, and the road would be closed to fire. So it kind of sent me all over the place. But, you know, that's the beauty of a journey. You know, you've got nowhere to be and everything to see.
And just seeing where you're led, which is really cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things that I love about traveling is I feel like, you know, each state, or even if it's a little city or town, everything has, like, its own flavor and its own scent. You had to have met some really interesting people along your ride.
I did. And, you know, and I think, and you're absolutely right, and I kind of figured that, you know, even that if the day wasn't exactly as I had envisaged it, it was still giving me something that I, you know, a gift that I could never have imagined. And to be honest, one of the most amazing lessons that I really learned on this trip was the power of connection with people. I had been used to being a solo player, a warrior, kind of out there by myself. Yeah. And the biggest lesson that I learned is that we are all one, and we are all connected. And the kindness, the generosity, the support, and the love that I got as I traveled as a solo person on a motorbike, you know, for this trip was just outstanding. And it really was. It was what gave me absolute joy every single day.
I love that. I totally agree with what you're saying about traveling and connecting with people. One of the things I always love is that the more people I meet, the more I realize we're all the same. We're all dealing with the same stuff in different ways, you know?
So true.
You had one story in your book, Riding Raw, that stuck out to me. I think you were in Portland, and you ran into a 17-year-old girl. She was crying in the street, and I remember you said that you didn't know how to help. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I feel like, you know, as human beings, we want to help. Let's say if it's through a nonprofit or somebody that we know, or somebody has a GoFundMe, there's like strategic ways that we give or help our neighbors. But sometimes I do think we come across people and we don't know exactly how to help, and it's a really unique moment.
Yeah, it really is, and you're absolutely right, and you have to actually appreciate that it is a unique moment, and it's a gift to you. And so literally the story was this. I'd had the bike in for service, and so I was in the city, which I really didn't. I was trying to avoid, you know, but having found myself in Portland, I fell in love with it. And I wanted to understand Portland, so I just put on my shoes, actually my heels, and walked the streets. And I came across this beautiful young girl, and she was just standing in the middle of the street just crying. And it is a moment for us as human beings, because you can ignore that pain and walk past. You can think to yourself, I don't know what to do, and I can ignore it and walk past. Or you can still think to yourself, I don't know what to do, but I have to do something. And literally, I mean, I didn't know how to help her. She was homeless. She had nothing. She had no money. And I actually couldn't get a kind of a reasonable conversation out of her, other than she was just crying and she was just lost. And so all I could do at the time, fortunately, and another person who was from Portland came and you know, managed to take her to a homeless shelter. He knew where to take her. Yeah. But all I could do as a kind of an unknown in that city was just put my arm around her and hold her and try and comfort her and obviously help her, you know, a bit financially as well. But she wasn't even after that. She wasn't after financial support. She just wanted to be held. She wanted someone, you know, to support her in kind of her pain. And I think, you know, that really was such a powerful lesson for me, but every day I got those lessons. You know, every day I came across people in gas stations, in coffee shops, at supermarket checkouts, and all they wanted to be was heard. They just wanted to matter.
Right.
And it really was a powerful learning lesson for me to understand that the energy that I put out, and it's a conscious decision to engage with someone, I used to get back tenfold. So to engage with someone and ask them about themselves and to listen to a bit of their story, I mean, sometimes I'd be 3 hours late because I would ask that question and I'd be sitting with someone in a coffee shop. But, you know, that was the joy of the day. And it's not that hard to do. You just have to make that, consciously make that connection. And the power of that is incredible.
So I would imagine, you know, to the people that you meet, it's like this cycle of riding in isolation along the road.
Yeah.
And then stopping and being, you know, surrounded by other people. What did you learn about yourself on the journey? Did you learn anything that was surprising about yourself that maybe you didn't know before?
I think one of the, apart from the, you know, kind of the importance of engaging with people, you know, I kind of learned about the power of vulnerability. And again, I had never wanted to admit to being vulnerable. I never wanted to ask for help. I mean, I would go into the ground, you know, striding forward to keep everyone at bay because I, you know, in my head, I had to manage everything myself. I had to have all of the answers. I had to be able to solve everything that came my way without any help. And on this trip, I learned the incredible power of vulnerability. And, you know, I learned it because I didn't have all the answers, you know, and people would offer their help originally and be like, no, no, it's fine, I've got this, but I didn't. And when I started to learn that it was okay to be vulnerable, it was okay to ask for help, two incredible things happened. Firstly, it was just such a relief off my shoulders to realize that I actually didn't need to have all the answers. And I guess the second part of that was I had no idea what a gift it was when you allow yourself to be vulnerable with somebody. And they, because it's a gift to them because they can rise up to the occasion and they can provide help and they feel really good about themselves. So I had no idea that it was a two-edged sword. And, you know, that was, for me, that was just an incredible, powerful learning. So I spend all of my time now asking for help. And that's something that just, you know, 2-3 years ago I would never have envisaged. So, yeah, it's been incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I will say that that's one of the things that I've come to enjoy about Startup Land and entrepreneurship ecosystems. The first time I went to the Lean Startup Conference in San Francisco and I would chat with different people, they would say, how can I help you? And I thought,
I know. And it's a shock, isn't it? Because we're trained to think, particularly as entrepreneurs, that you have to have it all together. You have to have all the answers. You have to be able to do everything yourself. You can be doing marketing 1 minute and operations the next. And that's just such a fallacy. And that's not how we're able to really kind of maximize our power as entrepreneurs when we do try and do it all ourselves. So, yeah, I can imagine it's quite a shock.
It was a shock. And then I remember it actually required a conversation. Like, my co-founder, Don, and I sitting down last year like, hey, we need to be able to know what to tell people when they ask us how they can help us so that it's actually a thoughtful answer, you know?
And it is, and I think, you know, sadly, there's also a degree of suspicion. You know, I think particularly, you know, particularly in business, because you tend to think to yourself, okay, so, yeah, they're going to help me, but what am I going to do in return?
Exactly.
You know, the no such thing as a free lunch. But that's not the way it is. And I think, you know, I think it's particularly important for, you know, for entrepreneurs to be able to say, you know what, help me, thank you. Because it is the only way that we can really leverage our skills and, you know, to really grow our businesses.
So true. One of the things that I do love about the way that the chapters are set up in Writing Raw is it kind of takes you on your journey. So I'll show you, like, this is where you were in this chapter between these two states, you know?
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. And as a reader, you feel like you're literally on the journey with you. But I have to ask you about the end of your journey, because I've come to learn that the end is just as important as the beginning. And in 2009, I took a trip that was life-changing for me, and I still remember the very last day of my trip. I was actually bawling my eyes out because I just felt like so refreshed and new. And so I just have to ask you, where were you, and how did your trip end?
Well, I think I had started to reach the point, you know, with my family where they were getting a little bit, you know, a little bit concerned about the fact that they thought I might never come home. Mm-hmm. So I did have to bargain with them in the end, and I just said, look, you know, give me 3 months and, you know, and I will make the circuit and I will come home. And so the circle basically effectively had me coming back to Whistler in British Columbia, which is where I started the journey. And I can remember, I mean, like you, that last day is just still, it's just completely ingrained in my mind. And I remember I wasn't too far away from Whistler, but I was trying to kind of make it last as long as I could for that day. And I remember sitting in a strange bed and breakfast, or I think it was an Airbnb, and looking around and thinking to myself, this is the last time I'm going to be sleeping in a strange bed.
Yeah.
And trying to stretch that day out as long as I could. And as I was kind of coming into Whistler, it is a beautiful ride, the last hour and a half. And I'd met at a gas station a group of guys that said, you know, can we ride with you to Whistler? And I gracefully, hopefully, declined, because I knew I had to bring this in by myself that last hour and a half. And I had expected tears. I'd expected the last ride in to bring me tears. And I actually finished the journey technically at my son's office, which is where I started. And you know, he's beautiful and, you know, one of the loves of my life, obviously. And he came down from his office and he put his arms around me and he said, I'm really proud of you, Mum. I'm so glad that you're home. And I was expecting tears then, and none came. But I said to him, okay, I'll meet you back at the apartment. I rode back, parked in the garage, switched off Voodoo, that's the name of my bike, for the last time, lifted my leg off the bike and just imploded. And I sat in the dirt, in the oil, in the garage floor, leaning up against Voodoo and just sobbing my heart out, because it was... nothing. The journey was nothing, but it was everything. You know, like, I hadn't cured cancer. I hadn't, you know, solved war, you know, found peace in the world. I just got on the motorbike and I'd ridden it for, you know, 83 days. So in the big scheme of things, it was nothing, but it was absolutely everything in terms of how it changed me as a person. So I understand the sobs. So I probably spent a lot of time in the dirt, in the grime and in the oil, just crying and crying in gratitude as well, because everything I'd learned, everything I'd been through, everything I'd experienced, the people that I'd met, the people that had supported me, it was just incredibly overwhelming. So actually a lot harder coming back than it was going out, frankly.
I bet. Yeah. And you could have just captured this in a diary and it was something that you shared with your family and your grandkids one day. Why share with this with the world? Why write the book?
I felt really strongly that I wanted the book to serve. Because I think probably one of the main kind of theme, I guess, of the biggest lessons that I learned on this trip was that it's great to have head success, and head success is you know, what I class as, you know, financial success, career, etc. It's great to have head success, and, you know, it's great to celebrate that. But it's more important to have heart success. So heart success is being authentic, being true to you, being the person that you are meant to be, connecting with yourself, connecting with the world. And when you bring those two together, that's kind of when you find fulfillment. You know, head success is great as long as it doesn't define you. And my head success had defined me.
Right.
And for me, you know, learning the importance of heart success, of learning to be grateful, of learning to connect, of learning to be vulnerable, of learning to say yes to the universe no matter what the universe threw at you. And sometimes it threw some crazy things at me. And I felt so strongly that if this book could help just one person experience that or kind of understand that and not kind of go through some of the big black holes that I went through, then for me it would all be worthwhile. And that's why I wrote it.
Oh, it's such a good, good, good read. I highly recommend it. I was excited to have the opportunity today to be able to talk to you about it. Because the book was published earlier this year, what is on your plate for 2018?
2018, I think is really exciting. So the book is now out, and that's been an incredible journey having done that. But for me, although I still have my businesses in Australia, I don't work in them day to day. And I have started up a new business, and that's literally, it's coaching. And it's oh, nice. Life coaching. So I kind of call myself an adventurepreneur.
Adventurepreneur.
Well, it's kind of a cross between obviously adventure, you know, being an entrepreneur, because I still love businesses and I love startup and I love kind of being in the mix of all of that. But also within that, you know, I kind of love adrenaline and adventure and, you know, doing new things. And so for me, starting a new business where hopefully that, you know, I can help people on their journey to be adventurepreneurs as well. So I have my website is up now. It's SueHollis.com. And for me, then there's also adrenaline and physical challenges. So I've done triathlons before, but I'm just in the process now of starting to train for an Ironman.
Wow.
And I know it seemed like a good idea at the time. I'm not so sure, Natasha. I'll, you know, check back with me in about 6 months.
Yeah, I will.
See if this old body is still holding together. But you know, for me, it's about, you know, I kind of talk to people about, you know, we take risks and we say yes and we go into places that scare us. And I guess I can't really kind of talk to people about that unless I'm doing it myself. And it scares the life out of me to do that. You know, I'd rather race around a motorbike track at 200 kilometers an hour than, you know, than have to do some of this stuff. But, you know, I need to kind of put myself out of my comfort zone. So, yeah, so it's the year of living uncomfortably.
No, I love that kind of stuff. We always say, you know, at Linus, if you're comfortable, if you feel really, really good, it means you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Growth and action requires you to be uncomfortable most of the time.
Well,
you know,
it absolutely does. And I can remember once, you know, I had a wonderful mentor and we were at a performance review and he said, look, you're doing really good things. He said, but, you know, you're not making mistakes. And I said, well, isn't that a good thing? He said, no. You know, if you're not making mistakes, you're not putting yourself out there, you're not taking risks, you're not pushing boundaries. He goes, I want to see mistakes. I want to see you doing that. And, you know, in that was in the very early start of my career in an airline. And, you know, that advice has just stuck with me. You know, make mistakes, take risks, go big. You know, because if you are comfortable, then you're just not living life as it's meant to be.
We're so thankful and lucky to have you here sharing your wisdom, sharing your story. The book is Writing Raw by Sue Hollis. For more information, they can go to SueHollis.com. At the end of this podcast, we will have the website available for readers to be able to click and go right to learn more and obviously to purchase the book. It's an amazing story. Sue, before we let you go, at Lioness, one of the things that we love to do at the end, we find it a lot of fun, is put you in the hot seat. So the hot seat is
okay.
On-the-spot, fun, rapid-fire questions.
Okay. Far away.
And it's a way for us to get to know you and what you like. And so are you ready to go into the hot seat, Sue?
Far away, I'm braced.
Okay, question number one. Who is your entrepreneur crush?
Oh, Elon Musk.
Oh, that's a good one. Number two, what is one of your guilty pleasures?
Oh, I'm a vegan, so I'm really boring. We don't have guilty pleasures. But if I did, it would probably be vegan chocolate.
Ooh. Name one movie that blew your socks off.
Mamma Mia, just for the fun of it.
Ah, good one. I guess they're breaking out with a part two, huh?
Yeah, I can't wait.
What is one of your favorite me time activities?
Climbing mountains, going for hikes in kind of in nature, in forests, climbing mountains, just being by myself and smelling the earth, having the wind in my face, being able to breathe in the trees, just completely sensory overload in nature.
Okay, so at Lioness, we tell women to rock the day, make the most out of it. You need to rock your day. What is one song on your kick-ass playlist?
Oh, I'm inundated with those. So many. Oh, look, it's still, for me, you know, one of the things that still gets me going if I'm running or I'm still out there, it's still, you know, it's still the theme from Rocky. Sad but true.
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, yeah, but
I like it.
But I'm sure most people don't even remember it because I'm seriously old.
Okay, so in your hometown, what's your hometown?
Sydney.
Sydney, which is on my bucket list. I got to get there.
Come.
What is the best place to get an appetizer in Sydney?
Oh, my favorite place is a place called Cafe Sydney, and it's a beautiful restaurant right on the harbor. You overlook the water, and it is just divine.
Nice. It sounds lovely, Sue. That's it. Easy. Oh, six. Number six. That was the last one.
Whew, I can breathe.
In the hot seat.
Oh, thanks, Natasha.
It's been such a pleasure to have you on Amplify today. It's always our goal to amplify the voice of women like you who are rocking it not only in startup land but in life. You're an inspiration to other women. We thank you so much for your time and joining us here today.
Oh, thank you, Natasha. It's just been a complete and utter joy. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. And to our Lioness listeners, until next time, unleash the lioness within and rock your day.